Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Best Practices for WebSphere Application Server Product Updates. Today's presenter is Joe Mosloff. Joe joined IBM in May 2001 and has been a member of WebSphere Application Server Level 2 support since March 2003. He is a subject matter expert for WebSphere Application Server installation and update issues. He received a bachelor's degree in computer science in 2001. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Joe.
Thank you, Joseph. I am today's presenter, Joe Mosloff, and we do have a lot of material to cover, so I'd like to get started right away. Slide 2, please, Joseph. Today we'll cover topics which explain best practices for updating a WebSphere application server product using maintenance packages. First, we'll get an overview of the update process. I'll explain the decisions you need to make prior to updating the product and also explain the major steps of the process. One of the important steps to the process is to obtain the correct maintenance packages. So I'll explain what kinds of maintenance packages are available and show some methods of identifying the packages in need. Before the update installer can update a product with maintenance packages, the update installer itself needs to be installed. So I'll explain how to obtain the update installer and then install it. We'll then cover the topic of using the update installer to actually install the maintenance packages. Once the update operations have completed, whether they succeed or fail, the update installer will write log files. Locating the logs is essential to verifying what happened. And finally, we'll delve into some tips learned from field experience, which will help you avoid issues with the update installer. Slide 3, please. The update process in today's presentation pertains to three IBM products: WebSphere Application Server, IBM HTTP Server, and the WebSphere plugin component. This presentation focuses on update processes available to version 6.1 and 7.0. Many of the principles discussed here also apply to version 6.0. However, there are some differences in the version 6.0 update process, which I have to leave outside the scope of today's presentation due to time constraints. However, in the question session at the end, feel free to ask questions that you have about WebSphere Application Server 6.0. We'll discuss the update process for distributed operating systems only. That means we'll cover the operating systems listed on this slide. The update process for IBM i, formerly known as iSeries or OS 400, and OS 390 or Zier Series is different, and that's also outside the scope of today's presentation. Slide 4, please. IBM periodically releases code upgrades to fix product defects and also address performance and serviceability. In version 6.1 and 7.0, we call these fix packs. IBM also releases patches to address individual issues. These patches are called interim fixes. Collectively, we refer to these different kinds of product updates as maintenance packages. Typically, you can obtain maintenance packages from the WebSphere Application Server support site on IBM.com. They're distributed in the form of files which have a .pak file extension. Slide 5, please. There are two types of fixed pack maintenance bundles. The first type of fixed pack is the product fixed pack. Each of these three products, WebSphere Application Server, IBM HTTP Server, and the WebSphere plugin, have their own fixed pack. We also have a Java SDK fixed pack type, which is compatible with each of the three products I mentioned. These fixed pack types are intentionally kept separate. In some cases, our clients have requirements which prevent them from using one of those fixed pack types but they're free to update using the other fixed path type. So although these two fixed path types are separate, we typically recommend updating a product with both fixed path types at the same time. But still, it is acceptable for you to use the product with different product and Java SDK fixed path levels. Slide 6, please. In order to apply maintenance packages to the product, we use a utility called the Update Installer. There are several versions of the Update Installer available. The newer versions of the Update Installer are backward compatible with older product versions. I'll explain this in a few minutes. The Update Installer itself needs to be installed prior to actually using it. In a manner, you could consider the Update Installer to be its own product, separate from the products it updates. Slide 7, please. Let's talk a few of the features in the Update Installer. When you install a maintenance pack on a product, the Update Installer automatically creates backups of the product files that it modifies. The backups of these product files are used to roll back or uninstall a maintenance pack. You do not need a copy of the original pack file in order to uninstall a maintenance pack because the Update Installer will maintain the backup file within the product itself. In case the Update Installer fails to properly install a fixed pack, this automatic backup is also used to recover from that install failure. Now, on the subject of backups, it's important for me to point out that the Update Installer does not automatically create backups of the product configuration files, namely in the case of the application server, I'm talking about profiles. So prior to running the Update Installer, it's a good idea to back up the configuration for each profile. The backup config utility is well suited to handle this. On a final note here, in case you need to uninstall and later reinstall a maintenance pack, you again need a copy of that maintenance pack file. You can't save maintenance data from a product and use it to reapply it later or apply that data to another product. Only these maintenance pack files can be used to apply maintenance. Slide 8, please. Okay, there are some tools and other things which you should prepare prior to updating a product with a maintenance pack. The items I go into here are a good checklist of what you need to consider. Before you can apply updates, you need to have installed the product, but you don't need to necessarily have configured the product yet. In fact, if you've just initially installed the product, it's better to configure it later after you've applied the maintenance packs. You need an unzip utility on the local system capable of unpacking zip files. You'll need this to unzip the Update Installer utility. And then, of course, as shown in this list, you need the Update Installer utility itself. You'll need to download it, unpack it, then install it. And we'll go into those details shortly. You also need to download the maintenance packs which you intend to install. Some maintenance packs are quite large. You may need to download over 800 megabytes of data for the latest maintenance packs for some of these products. You also need about that much space free in the temporary directory as well as the products directory. It's also important to account for the time needed to prepare and install the fix. Downloading the fix and installing the Update Installer can be handled prior to actually installing the maintenance. It's important to keep this in mind because installing the maintenance pack and rolling it back if there's a failure must be done while the server is down. But these other preparation steps, like downloading and installing the Update Installer, can be done beforehand. Slide 9, please. WebSphere application server products support a number of operating systems and system architectures. This slide shows a few examples of where the product not only supports a certain operating system, like Linux, but it also supports specific processor architectures used with that operating system, such as x86 processors, PowerPC processors, or even in the case of Linux, OS 390. In addition to those factors, there are also 32-bit and 64-bit offerings available for many editions of the product. You need to be sure that you obtain the correct maintenance packages to match the products that you're using. Slide 10, please. So how can we match your product with the fixed pack you need? You'll need to identify the edition of the product you're using. With version 7.0 products, this is fairly straightforward. The version info utility can convey this information to you. Prior to version 7.0, this unfortunately is not as straightforward, but it can still be handled when you know where to look. But we'll discuss that now. Slide 11, please. To determine the edition you're using for version 6.1 products, look for a file named version.txt. It's located in the uninst subdirectory of the product installation. And once again, I remind you that this information that I'm talking about here applies to WebSphere application server, IBM HTTP server, and WebSphere plugin. This version.txt file is relatively small, so you can display it in a standard text viewer or editor. The file lists the platform and architecture of the product edition you're using, which indicates the processor architecture as well as whether it's the 32-bit or 64-bit edition of the product. If you're watching this slide online right now, this is highlighted in red text. Slide 12, please. Now, as I mentioned before, determining the product edition in version 7.0 is more straightforward. In this case, you can run the version info utility that's located in the bin directory of the product. It will state the product's architecture as well as whether it's 32-bit or 64-bit. The method I mentioned for version 6.1 can also be used here if you want. The version.txt file does also exist for version 7.0. The example shown here is an excerpt from the bottom of the version info output. The full output contains more information, such as the product installation directory and indications of whether or not other products are installed on top of this product. Slide 13, please. Once you know the product edition, you can obtain the maintenance pack you need from IBM.com. There are a couple of ways to obtain maintenance packs. One method is to search the WebSphere application server support page using the version number of the fixed pack you need, as well as the title of the fixed pack. Any search results that lead to a fixed list or a README file for a fixed pack will have a download link to that fixed pack. Alternatively, our support team maintains a recommended updates page, which lists the latest available fixed packs for these WebSphere application server products. It also lists the next scheduled fixed pack release date. When you've found the support page for the fixed pack you want, you can choose the operating system using the navigation tabs at the top of that page. Also, if you're looking for a particular interim fix, you can use the support site search to look for that fixes ID. Now, keep in mind, some of the fixes that we release rolled into currently available fix packs, so check the fix list link that's available from the recommended updates page to see if a fix pack already contains the interim fix you're looking for. Slide 14, please. Here's an excerpt of a typical fixed pack download page. The portion below the red line on this page is actually about halfway down the web page. typically the various six-pack editions for a particular operating system are listed in that large table with download links on the right side. Briefly, in this excerpt, I'll describe what we're seeing here. The first three things listed are 32-bit Linux fix packs. Top one is for the application server. The next one is for the plugin component. And the third one is for IBM HTTP server. The last one listed is also an application server fix pack, but it's intended for the 64-bit edition of the product. Slide 15, please. Once you've downloaded a fix pack, check the extension on the file name. If the file name ends with a .pak file extension, then do not unzip that file. Just leave it intact. On the other hand, if the file name ends with a .zip file extension, then it's intended to be unzipped. Unzip it to a directory of your choice. But if the file name ends with a .pack.zip file extension, do not unzip that file. Instead, rename the file so that it uses the .pack extension only. The reason I'm bringing this up is because certain browsers, most notably Microsoft's Internet Explorer, may add that .zip file extension after downloading a file, which is meant to only have a .pack extension. This might lead you to attempt to unzip a file which really isn't meant to be unzipped. So please pay close attention to the file extensions of the files that you've downloaded. Slide 16, please. In addition to downloading the fix packs, you also need to obtain the update installer itself. The newer update installer versions are backward compatible with most previous product versions. As shown in the table at the top of this slide, the version 7.0 update installer is compatible with product versions 6.0.2.21 through the most current version of 7.0. We recommend using the version 7.0 update installer because it's the most up-to-date build of the update installer. When you're choosing an update installer version to download and use, it matters what version of the product you're updating to. It really doesn't matter what the version of the product is that you're updating from. The update installer itself has both 32-bit and 64-bit editions. They're both compatible with the 32-bit and 64-bit products. I recommend using the 32-bit update installer since it's supported on both 32-bit and 64-bit hardware, and it can update both the 32-bit and 64-bit products. Slide 17, please. Generally, the support pages which offer maintenance pack downloads will also provide a link to a compatible update installer download page. Alternatively, you can download the update installer from the update installer resource page. I don't have it on the slides you're seeing there, but you can use reference number 120.5991 to find this update installer page in the speaker notes, which will be published in a week or two for this presentation. I'll include this URL. Once it's downloaded, unzip the update installer file to a temporary directory or some directory of your choice. Slide 18, please. Now we'll talk about actually installing the update installer. You can use the update installer in a graphical wizard mode or using a non-interactive silent mode. For those unfamiliar with the update installer, using the graphical wizard is the preferred method because it guides you through the installation process. But the graphical wizard is not always viable for production-level environments. Instead, in production environments, folks use the silent mode because it doesn't require the bandwidth of running graphics over a remote connection, and it also allows you to handle the whole update process in a consistent manner. Since the silent mode is more viable for production environments and it requires more explanation, that's what I'm going to concentrate on telling you about today. The silent mode runs without graphics. In fact, it's completely non-interactive. It will not prompt you with questions about how to handle the install. Instead, you need to set up what we call a response file, which contains your selections for actually running the install. Once you've downloaded and unzipped the update installer, the response file is in the directory that comes out of the zip called update installer. The file itself is named responsefile.updinstaller.txt. Make a copy of that file so that you can maintain a copy of the original, and open the copy in a text editor. Now, read the response file. The file is full of comments, and they direct you to the parameters which you need to edit to actually run the install. Slide 19, please. The sample response file is several pages long, and it contains a small number of options. On this slide, I've excerpted the four parameters which are required at a minimum to set up a proper installation response file. If you wanted to, you could literally copy and paste this text into a file and use it as your response file. The blue text lines are comments which explain how to edit each of the options in the response file. These are lines that I've written for this presentation to give a very brief summary of each of these options. The black text shows the options exactly as they appear in the original sample response file. In case you want to learn more about each option, you can search that exact text in the sample response file to locate it, and then you can read the comments associated with it. Now, due to time constraints, I'm not going to delve into each of the options here. For those of you that are reviewing the response file, you'll find the blue text on this page will help guide you. And certainly, I can take questions later if you have questions about these options. Slide 20, please. Once the response file is set up, you can proceed to actually install the update installer. To do that, run the installation command using the parameters as I've shown on this slide. Running the install program with no parameters at all brings up the graphical install wizard. We won't really visit that in detail, but if you'd like to try it yourself, simply start the install program with no parameters. When you do run the update installer in silent mode using your response file, it is quite literally silent. It does not print text to indicate its progress, nor does it print a message indicating whether it succeeded or failed. To verify what happened, you should direct your attention to the log file. Slide 21, please. Locating the log files is one of the most important steps in verifying the install. And I'll take a moment to reiterate this point. Oftentimes, when I'm working with clients on their WebSphere systems, we find that there might be just a simple error standing in the way of a good install, but folks can't find the log file to actually tell them what the problem is. So that's why I'd like to take the time to show you where to look for these log files. Oftentimes, if you can just find the log file, it really does guide you to what the problem is. Some of the most common update installer errors are identified with a clear error message printed in the log. So in a typical successful installation of the update installer, the installation log is right inside the directory wherever you install the update installer. Specifically, it's in a subdirectory named logs/install. Now, note that In the slides that we've distributed to you, there's a minor error here in the first bullet. It left out the name of the install directory. When you're in the logs/install directory, the installation log file is simply named log.txt. If the update installer fails to install, the log may not end up in that directory. The update installer may possibly have not been able to create that directory. If the update installer fails early in the process, it might not even create that. So in that case, the log is placed in a directory named updlogs under the current user's home directory. Again, the file is simply named log.txt, although when it's in the updlogs directory, it might have a date stamp or number appended to the end of the file name. In case you're unfamiliar with locating the current user's home directory, I have a couple of hints on this slide. Those are commands that you can enter at a command prompt or telnet session to get to the current user's home directory. Slide 22, please. Once you've located that log.txt file, open it in the text editor. Go to the last line of the file. The beginning of the line shows the timestamp. You should verify that the timestamp matches the time that you were running the update installer. This way you can be sure you're reading a recent relevant log file instead of an old log file. That last line will indicate whether or not the installation was a success or a failure. The keyword inst-conf success indicates a success, whereas inst-conf failure indicates failure. In case of an installation failure, go back to the top of the log file and read downward. Look for an error message which takes up several lines of text. As your eye scans over the log file, the error messages usually stand out because they don't have a timestamp in front of every line of the log file. If you're familiar with what a Java exception looks like, look for Java exception messages too. Those might also give a good clue about the nature of the error. I'll discuss some of the common causes for error a little later. Slide 23, please. Once the update installer is successfully installed, you can then move to the next step, which is to actually use the update installer to apply maintenance packages to the product. Many of the points that I relate here have a familiar theme. The update installer's update process follows many of the same conventions as installing the update installer. As with the installation, you can choose silent mode or graphical wizard mode. To use the silent mode, you need to configure a response file, which again contains the selections to run the update process. And note that this response file is different than the installation response file, which I mentioned earlier. This response file is located in the update installer's response files subdirectory. Two response files are available. One is called install.txt, and the other is called uninstall.txt. As the names imply, they show examples for installing and uninstalling maintenance packages. Make a copy of the response file and open that copy in a text editor. Once again, there are comments in this response file to indicate which options need to be edited in order to run the update process. Slide 24, please. Once again, I've highlighted the minimum number of options which you need to edit in order to create a viable response file. This response file is used for actually installing one or more maintenance packages. Now, as before, I won't go into the individual options listed here. For those of you who are following these slides, you'll find that the text highlighted in blue helps explain each of the options in this response file. Slide 25, please. Once the update response file is set up, you're almost ready to proceed with the product update. But prior to invoking the update installer, be sure that all application servers or web servers, in the case of IBM HTTP server, are shut down. It's not possible to update a product which has running processes. A single installation instance of WebSphere application server can support multiple configuration profiles, and each of those can contain multiple servers. You have to be sure that all the servers and every profile associated with a particular install are all shut down. Also, you need to be sure that you log in using the same user ID as the user that had originally installed the product that you're about to update. Slide 26, please. When you're ready, invoke the update process using the command examples shown on this slide. Similar to what I mentioned earlier, the silent update process is almost literally silent. It won't print text to indicate its progress, nor does it print messages to indicate success or failure. Slide 27, please. Now we'll get into some troubleshooting techniques here, which can also show you what the result of that update actually was. You can use these tips to actually verify that the fix is installed properly. During the update operation, the log files are initially written to one location. At the end of the update, the log files might be moved somewhere else. Now, the idea behind moving the log files is to help organize them for service personnel, like me, to assess later. But unfortunately, this has a side effect of making it necessary for you to check a couple different locations when you're looking for these log files. So let's discuss the first location you should check. Initially, the logs are written to a directory under the update installer's main directory named temp with a number appended to it. There may be several temp directories present. When you're looking for the latest update log, pick the highest numbered temp directory under the update installer's logs directory. I show an example on this slide of an update log.txt file that happens to be in a directory named tmt9. Update log.txt is the main log that you should focus your attention on when you're installing maintenance packs. Now, if you can't find a recent file named update log.txt in that temp directory, that means the log was moved elsewhere. We'll discuss where that log file went in a few moments. Slide 28, please. So here's where that log file ends up being moved to. Most of the time, when the update installer is well behaved, the logs end up here. Starting in the product's home directory, that is the directory that the product was installed in, look for the logs/update directory. You'll see several more subdirectories in there, and each of those contains sets of logs. If you use the update installer to apply a single maintenance pack, then the log files associated with that maintenance pack are moved to a directory that uses that maintenance pack's name with .install appended to the end. That was a bit of a mouthful, so let me give you an example here. If you installed an interim fix named PK12345, then the logs for the installation of that fix would be moved to the product's home under logs/update/PK12345.install in that PK12345.install directory, you'll find the update log.txt file. If you use the update installer to apply multiple maintenance packages in a single run of the update installer, then the sets of logs for all those maintenance packages are logged in the same place. These logs are moved to a subdirectory simply named install. So the full path for such log files would be under the product's home in /laws/update/install. Slide 29, please. Once you've located the log file, you can review it to verify the results of the update operation. Open the updateLog.txt file and look at the last line of the file. Just like when you installed the update installer, you should verify that the timestamp indicates a recent time so that you make sure you're not accidentally reading an outdated log file. The last line of the log file can indicate three possible outcomes. Inscomp success indicates successful update. If you see this success message in your log, you don't need to review the log any further, since this message alone is sufficient to confirm a good update. On the other hand, you may see an inscomp failure message. This means that one or more of the maintenance packs failed to update the product properly. Read the messages in the log from top to bottom and look for error messages or Java exception messages. Again, in a few minutes, we'll review the most common causes for errors which can lead to a failure. And finally, the operation can also result in an inscomp partial success. Partial success deserves more explanation, and we'll delve into that in just a few moments. Slide 30, please. So what do you do if the update failed? If the update installer begins to install a maintenance pack, but the operation fails at some point as it's writing to the product, then you need to remove the failed fix pack from the product. To do that, set up another response file to uninstall the maintenance packs which you are most recently attempting to install. Similar to the install.txt sample response file, there is also an uninstall.txt sample response file. You use this to uninstall fixed packs. Setting up the uninstall response file is very similar to setting up the install response file. However, instead of specifying the full path to a .pack maintenance file, you just specify the name of the file that you want to uninstall. Once you've set up the uninstall response file, invoke the update installer again and specify the uninstall response file's name. Once the maintenance pack is successfully uninstalled, you can either begin using the product again, as in starting up application servers or web servers, or you can choose to attempt to install the maintenance pack again. Slide 31, please. Now let's discuss that partial success result which I mentioned earlier. What does it mean when the update installer tells you that a maintenance pack install has partially succeeded? Well, in order to explain this, I need to give a few background details about how maintenance packs are processed. When a maintenance pack is installed, not only does it deliver code fixes, but it also can potentially run configuration scripts to tweak the configuration profiles. A partial success means that the code fixes were delivered, and that's good news. It means your product has been updated with all the code that the maintenance pack was meant to deliver. But it also means that one of the scripts which was intended to make a configuration change had failed. So what are the implications of this? Slide 32, please. When the update installer states that it partially succeeded, that means that the configuration script which failed is considered to be something non-essential. The configuration script that the changes were supposed to make can be accomplished later without reinstalling the whole maintenance pack in this case. In addition, you can safely start and run the product after receiving a partial success code. You don't need to endanger your limited maintenance window simply because of a partial success. Instead, you can use the product and schedule maintenance to correct the partial success during a later maintenance window. The reason for the script failure is logged in a file called updateconfig.log, which is in the same directory as that updatelog.txt file. But typically, and unfortunately, the information in this file is not really user serviceable. You usually need assistance from IBM support to diagnose these kinds of partial success issues. But again, this can be done on a relatively relaxed schedule because it really should not impact production stability. Slide 33, please. There are some common mistakes which can lead to errors showing up in the log file. Now we'll get into some of the common items to check if there's a problem. This applies to both installing the update installer and then actually using the update installer to update a product. When you're installing in silent mode, check the response file carefully. If you make a mistake in the response file, the log file typically shows an error message pointing right to the parameter which is incorrect. As I mentioned previously, fixed packs typically require a large amount of disk space, both in the products file system as well as the temp file system. The log file will list the file systems that it's testing and show how much space is required if there is insufficient space. If you're unable to even start the update installer due to an execute permission denied error, this mostly applies to Unix systems, verify that the update installer downloaded from IBM was unpacked properly using an unzip utility, and you should unpack it on the same system that you intend to use it on. Occasionally, I've come across cases where folks download an update installer intended for a Unix-based system, but they download it to their Windows-based laptop and unzip it there, and then FTP the individual files to their Unix system. That does not work. You lose the file permissions along the way. You really should unzip the file right on the system you intend to use it on. If the update installer log file shows an error stating access is denied to a particular file, there can be several reasons for this. First, and once again, be sure that all the servers associated with the product are shut down before applying the fix. You can't update a product while it's running. On Windows specifically, be sure to turn off the indexing service and also turn off products which provide similar functions, such as Google Desktop. Those kinds of services try to read the contents of files as the update installer writes them, and this can really get in the way of the update process. Also on Windows specifically, you may need to reboot the system prior to installing the fix pack. In fact, I recommend it. I'll elaborate on this in a few moments. Slide 34, please. If you try using the update installer in silent mode, and it does not seem to produce any log file in the locations I mentioned earlier, then there's one more option which can help generate data. As I'm showing on the example here, try starting the update installer using the parameter minus is colon Java console. This won't specifically generate a log file. Instead, it causes log data to be displayed directly on the console. And this technique works for both installing the update installer and using the update installer to apply maintenance packs. Slide 35, please. Prior to using the update installer, you can take a few quick steps to avoid trouble. Some of the steps tie directly to the troubleshooting tips I mentioned a few moments ago, like the first point listed here. As I mentioned earlier, and I can't stress this enough, you do need to be sure that all servers associated with the product need to be shut down prior to installing a maintenance pack. I have also mentioned that the update installer does check for this condition, and it warns you if it thinks processes are running. But as with many things, it's not always perfect, and you could be caught by a running process. The next point elaborates on a troubleshooting tip I mentioned a few moments ago. On Windows systems, the operating system itself may lock certain DLL files, such as the one named wasservicemessage.dll. This can cause the update installer to fail right in the middle of an update. To avoid this, configure your application servers to not automatically start up upon reboot. Then reboot the system and apply the fix pack before you start any servers. Let's move on to the next point and discuss network file systems. You can install maintenance packs which are located on a shared network file system, but depending on the network latency, installing from a network file system can be much, much slower than simply copying the maintenance pack or file to a local file system first and then installing from that local copy. The final point on this slide is a tip for administrators who work with production systems which are only accessible through a virtual private network or a dial-up connection. Because the update installer can take some time to install a maintenance pack, a remote connection may appear to be idle to your networking software. Depending on the kind of networking software you use to connect to a virtual private network, this can cause the software to terminate the connection before the update installer is finished. So for that reason, if you use network connectivity software that might cut off a connection to a remote system because it's idle, do what's necessary just to keep the connection looking somewhat busy so it's not terminated because it appears idle. Slide 36, please. Well, folks, we've reached the end. That's it. Let's recap the discussion. When updating a WebSphere product, you first need to be sure that you choose the correct maintenance pack. And to help you with this, you need to identify the edition of the product you're using. And once you know this information, you can obtain and install the update installer utility, which is responsible for applying the maintenance pack. After using the update installer to apply the maintenance pack, locate the logs produced and verify that the fix installed without error. If an error does occur, use the troubleshooting tips that I've discussed earlier. Slide 37, please. Now, on a wider topic than just the update installer, we'd like to share a couple of resources with you to help you out. Even more satisfying than when I can solve your problem is when you solve your own problem. This chart includes a link to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcast and conference information, like the one you're listening to right now. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. As a support person myself, I can't stress this enough. If you're a part of the Passport Advantage program, please look into that SR tool. It's a huge help for managing the PMRs you use to work with us. And finally, the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. We'll move on to slide 38, but at this point, I'll turn the presentation back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Joe, for a fantastic presentation. At this point, Tanya, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And at this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you, Tanya. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.